I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. Here we go. We're back. Tyler, another episode of Pocket Presence. No guests this week because we have way, way too much to talk about. Free agencies hit. It's rolling.
I can't believe how much happened. I mean, like, you were refreshing Twitter, the Sleeper app, every minute, and it seemed like there was new news. Like, you couldn't get any work done, any studying done for the full day on Monday, it felt like.
Yeah. Dude, it's been crazy. We have a lot that's happened. Even today, we just got Desmond Ridder. At the time of recording, Desmond Ridder traded to the Cardinals for Rondale Moore. I think that's a great pickup for the Falcons. I think it's a low-risk pickup for the Cardinals. Probably wants to have somewhat of a similar play style to Kyler Murray. But we have a lot of like scheme fits to talk about, a lot of fantasy implications for guys to talk about. Chiefs might be leaving Kansas City. Who knows? There's just a lot. There's a lot of random stuff going on right now.
Totally is. Let's break into it. So I think the way I want to do this is we'll go over the big free agent signings. We'll talk through each of them. And I'd love your take on if it's a positive, neutral, or negative fantasy impact. Because a lot of people listening here are going to want to know how it's going to impact their fantasy team. So the first domino to fall in the quarterback market was Kirk Cousins signing to Atlanta. I think we all saw this coming, but another $100 million guaranteed deal. I think Kirk is going to make something like $400 million when his career is all said and done, which has to put him in the top echelon of earners, which is crazy because a lot of people might not consider him to be in that top tier of quarterbacks, but the guy knows how to get his bag. To talk about this move to Atlanta. I know you like the Falcons skill guys, and now they have somebody to get them the ball, hopefully.
Yeah, so I love this. I think this is huge for everybody. Kirk Cousins, high value fantasy player, especially through the air. And obviously with the Falcons, they have a bunch of young studs that really never got the chance to show what they can do consistently with Arthur Smith. Now they get Raheem Morris, a guy that's been a part of really high powered offenses. He is now a defensive guy. People forget that Raheem coached the receivers of the Falcons when they had Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Mohamed Sanu. He was an offensive coach. Now he is a defensive side guy. So what we're working with here is we have Kirk Cousins with a loaded roster, and they're going to be slinging it in a weak division. His value is huge if he can stay healthy. Obviously, that's a big note for everybody. But Bijan Robinson, his catches out of the backfield, they're up. You have Drake London, whose value's up. Then you have guys that are like sneaky stashes, like Darnell Mooney, who just signed a large contract with the Falcons. Rondale Moore, who's a guy that I love. They have weapons now. They have a full like fleet of guys. Oh, and not to mention the unicorn, Kyle Pitts. So you look at what guys like Hockenson was able to do, right, with the Vikings. Now you have Pitts, who has a higher ceiling than him. I mean, this could be one of the most explosive offenses in football this year. And I think that's something for Falcons fans to be really excited about. And for those of you drafting, I would have these guys labeled with real hope throughout draft season.
I think at the very least, if you're the Falcons, you can talk about windows here. Kirk is obviously a little older now, 36, I believe, and they have a really young core of skill position guys. So if nothing else, you probably get a sense at the very least of what each of these guys can do. Like, do you know that Drake London could be a number one? Is Kyle Pitts the unicorn that everybody thinks he is? I don't think they've had enough of a sample size to really know before. And now at least Kirk will give them the chance to say yes or no. This is a guy we want to move forward with, or maybe this is a guy we want to get rid of.
I totally agree with you. That's what you get when you get a veteran quarterback. You get to evaluate everyone else within that level of that's our checkbox at quarterback. Now what can everyone else do? When you have a young quarterback, it's hard to tell. Like, is it the receivers? Is he this? Is he that? But I think we're going to find out who the Atlanta Falcons actually are now and what their roster actually is this season. I'm sure they're going to be targeting some defensive guys in the draft because that seems to be where they're lacking. Their offensive line's solid. So they're ready to go. They're ready to take over the South. And they could be a team like the Lions this year where you're just kind of looking up and you're like, holy crap, they're the third seed. Like, it could happen, especially given their schedule.
Did you see the Kirk Cousins press conference clip where he was joking about Kyle Pitts giving him the number eight? And Kirk was like, well, I want to do something for you. I want to at least donate to charity. And Kyle Pitts apparently said in response, at least give me a couple more targets. And Kirk was like, oh, he was just joking. And everyone on Twitter was like, dude, he was not joking.
He was not joking. No, Falcons Twitter, that's real. Atlanta Falcons players, that's real. Kirk, get with it because that is very real. Just feed your guy.
Totally. Okay, let's stick on quarterbacks here for a second. So Kirk was sort of this first domino to fall. Then we had, before that actually, we had Russell Wilson signing to the Steelers, another team that seemed to be in need of a quarterback. They get him on a super cheap deal. Of course, the Broncos are paying him something ridiculous, like close to $40 million this year. So he's with the Steelers for like $1 million, which is an incredible deal in my opinion. What do you make of that move, Russ, to the Steelers?
That's a huge low risk deal for the Steelers. You get leadership, you get a guy that can make plays with his feet, something that you really didn't have. And you have a guy that's, look, say what you want about Russ. He found ways to win games in critical situations last year in a subpar offense with subpar play calling. Call it what it is. He made some mistakes, yes. But the Steelers have a really good defense. They didn't give up 70 points at all at any point last year in one single game. Their offense, look, you're dealing with Arthur Smith now. Who knows, right? Who knows? But I think a guy like Russell Wilson, he takes care of the football, which was the biggest thing that the Falcons struggled with last year with Desmond Ridder. Ridder made some throws here and there. He missed some throws. He kind of played like run of the mill, but he turned the ball over a lot. With Russ, you're not going to get turnovers. He's going to play conservative. And I think that that fits with the play style of how they want to play with their complementary defense, special teams, and their run game. I would not go after him in fantasy, but I do think if you get a guy like George Pickens, who is now bona fide wide receiver one for them, Deontay Johnson's gone, a guy like Pickens is going to get his. It is what it is. So I'm looking at it that way. I think that guys like Najee Harris and Warren are going to eat pretty well. And last year, Russell Wilson, I believe for the entire season, led the league in passes to running backs. Mm-hmm. Like their running backs were eating. So PPR leagues for Harris and Warren, look out.
Can you talk a little bit about the personalities that are now involved in Pittsburgh? Because I think a lot of the narrative around Russell Wilson is he's this overly optimistic guy, puts on this veneer of everything's great, Mr. Presidential, and that seemed to clash with Sean Payton in Denver. It was part of the reason he was on the outs there. Now he goes to Pittsburgh, which is certainly no stranger to like clashing personalities. I think when you look back at Tomlin's career, one thing I hope he's remembered for is the fact that he had Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger in a room, and none of the stuff that actually happened came out until all these guys left. Can you talk about, now including Arthur Smith in that mix, what you think the dynamic's going to be like?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think the dynamic in Pittsburgh between Tomlin, Arthur Smith, and Russell Wilson is going to be electric. It could be so weird that it just shocks people how it works. I could, like, weirdly enough, seeing it just working. And I think at the end of the day, all of them are at a point in their career where, look, Arthur Smith went through it. At this point, I guarantee he just wants to win and he wants to have a productive offense. I bet that's all that he cares about right now. Russell Wilson, he's been through it. He just wants to win and he wants to take care of the football and win games. That's it. Tomlin, he's been winning forever. He's been above 500 forever. I think they have the team to find a way to do it again and maybe be a wild card team. I don't think they win the division. I don't think they have the guys to do that, but they could be a team that's like, damn, we can't make mistakes against the Steelers because they're not going to just give us the game. So that's kind of what I see that dynamic playing out like.
Yeah, I guess that's the last question here is Tomlin has found a way with Mason Rudolph, Kenny Pickett, and aging Ben Roethlisberger to get them to 9 wins in every season. Does Russ take them past that 11-12 win threshold that – I mean, that it seems like that's what's now required in Pittsburgh. There seems to be a little bit of Tomlin fatigue where, hey, if we can't, you know, if we can't start like having seasons that get us deep into the playoffs and not just having these winning seasons, I don't know how much longer Tomlin sticks around.
Yeah, I could see Russ doing it if we get the best version of Russ. Sure. And I think if there's ever been a time we're going to get the best version of Russ in the last stretch of his career, it's going to be right now because he has been dragged, kicked around, beaten up, like, If there's ever a time that we're going to get Danger Russ, it would be this year in Pittsburgh. And if we don't get it, it's over.
Yeah.
For all of them, probably.
Yeah, you're probably right. I do like that note of like they're all kind of in this inflection point in their careers. Arthur Smith, Mike Tomlin, Russell Wilson. Like it's got to work for all of them. So they're just going to have to find a way to make it work. And I think there's a point too where Russ is now plugging into a culture. Say what you want about the Steelers. They pretty strong and well-established culture. Yeah, he doesn't have to be like the culture setter, which I think in a lot of ways is how he could
rub
people the wrong way. Right. Whereas now he can plug in and maybe just take a step back from having to be Mr. Superman all the time.
Yeah. If he can just put his head down and just show up and do his job, like, and show them that he's there for a reason versus having to be the outspoken guy that he has typically been in his career, I think that would vibe well with, like, that's TJ Watt's team. You know what I mean? Where Denver, whose team was it with Hackett? Nobody knew. Yeah. Russ had just gotten there, huge contract. It's got to be his team where this is TJ Watt's team. They need a little bit of a spark plug on offense. Russ, be that spark plug.
Yeah. Talk to me about the move by Vegas to sign Minshew. And I want you to kind of categorize it here because this is all leading to where the hell does Justin Fields go? Because after Russ, Kirk, now Minshew to Vegas, it seems like all the quarterback spots are filled at this point. Talk about that dynamic. Yep.
Dude, I think that one, Minshew to Vegas is massive because as much as Aiden O'Connell played okay as a rookie, he's not mobile at all, not in the slightest. And you have got, if you're not elite arm talent, you have got to be able to move to buy time, to create plays, especially playing against teams like the Chiefs twice a year, playing against the Broncos twice a year, playing against the Chargers twice a year. Like, you're going to be able to move around. That style of quarterback play is not long-term. So they get a guy like Minshew who can create some magic. That's his thing, right? And he's got a really good receiving core, probably the best receiving core that Gardner Minshew's ever played with. And now I will say the Colts receiving core last year was pretty solid, but they have Jacoby Myers, Davante Adams. Like, he's got guys he can get the ball to. Davante Adams might have a career year in targets. Like, I'm not even lying. So all that to be said, you need a little bit of a wild card at quarterback when you're a team that needs some juice. And now you have a defense with a stout line. Like, you could kind of go make something happen with the Raiders. I love that signing. I think Minshew plays a style of football that I love. And that's how I try to play my style of football. Like, it's take what's there, but then go create. And I think guys like him are going to have more success over the course of the next 10 to 20 years in the NFL. And I'm excited. And conversely to that, to Justin Fields, I really think Fields is going to stay in Chicago. I do. I don't see him going out of Chicago. I don't think they're going to get what they want for him. I think they're better off trading the pick for a haul, which they're probably better off keeping Justin Fields and taking Caleb Williams if they really want to and seeing what happens. Maybe you let Justin ride it out in the beginning of the year and then Caleb takes over if it's not going well. And then you trade Justin midseason, because midseason trades are a thing for quarterbacks like that. Like, it happens all the time. So I don't know, man. I don't think they can just bank on getting rid of Fields and thinking Caleb Williams is going to be the answer.
We're kind of willing it into existence here after our mock draft last week where Justin Fields stays.
Early movers. Early.
I also think that is such a delicate balance, what you just described, of keeping Fields but also drafting Caleb and then making that switch somewhere in the middle of the season, because, I mean, I have no idea how the Chicago Bears fan base is going to react. It seems like they're split, whether they want to keep Fields or whether they want to draft Williams. And so it seems like there's going to be this weird division. And that's not even to mention how the team feels about Fields versus Williams. It just seems like a total ticking time bomb waiting to happen if they keep both guys.
They got to do something. And again, think about it, though. Poles said, how long ago? Was it 2-3 weeks ago? He said if they're going to move him, they would have loved to have moved him like sooner rather than later. Well, buddy, it is way later. Mm. It is way, way later. I don't even know what the betting odds are for him to go anywhere right now, but I would say he's probably staying, dude. You're not just going to give Justin Fields away. When you look at his plays that he has had in the NFL, some of his best plays are better than any quarterback in the league right now. Honestly, his best plays are there. How do you get him to raise his floor and occasionally have those best plays shine, but to eliminate some of the bad plays? Like, that's got to come from coaching. It's got to come from the situations you're putting him in. And again, dude, people talk about how much he was sacked and this and that. And I'm just like, I've seen so many missed blocks and unblocked people. And like, all of his great plays came from plays that I know Jared Goff would have gotten sacked in. Like, you know what I mean? I just don't think it's over for him. And I think he can still do it. He just needs things around him to go well.
I agree. I think at this point, his trade value is probably as low as it's ever going to be. I think their best chance right now, Mac Jones just got traded for a 6 to Jacksonville. Yeah. I don't think he's quite that low, but maybe you consider his value like a 4th-round pick at this point. Maybe preseason, early in the season, there's an injury, and now he's worth a 2.
Injuries happen every year.
It seems like that's their only chance. But again, I think you're still running the risk of having both guys in the room at the same time. And you can speak to this better than me, but I just think of Jordan Love drafted the Packers. And that's a story. And nobody was thinking Jordan Love was going to be replacing Aaron Rodgers. But now you have two guys in here that, like, you don't know who's going to start. And that,
what are they
going
to do?
Seems like a mess. And Chicago is not well known for handling these types of situations well.
Yeah. You could also see a draft night trade, right? Like, I think if he is not traded by draft night, he's going to be there. Obviously, that's my thoughts. I think that's everyone's thoughts. But I would be almost at this point more shocked if they do trade him than don't. Just my gut is just telling me that. And if they do, cool. New start somewhere. Who the hell knows where it'll be, because there's not a lot of spots right now. But right. I don't know. He has so much upside that if he just gets into the right situation, like, and that's the thing with these quarterbacks, man. Look at Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold was considered a bust. He went from the Jets to the Panthers and then now to the 49ers, then to the Vikings. He was the number 3 overall pick in the draft. Like, it just didn't work out. And now he's slated to be the starter for the Vikings, and he's probably going to play well. He's got Justin Jefferson, Aaron Jones. He's got Jordan Addison. He's got Hockenson. He's going to be in the best situation he's ever been in his career as a starter. And now it's like, okay, go prove it. Same thing with guys like Geno Smith. Geno Smith did nothing for a decade. Like, literally about a decade, he did nothing. And now he just signs a massive contract. Like, it is, Justin Fields is 24 years old, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Justin Fields is 24 freaking years old. These guys are 30 plus, and the jury is already out on him when his best plays in his career are better than some of the best quarterbacks to play the game's best plays in his career. Like, give the kid some time. You threw him into the lion's den and expected him to just bring Chicago back when it's a QB cemetery. So let me get off my soapbox a little bit, but I'm just saying, dude, a lot of people hate on Justin Fields. Justin Fields has done some of the best things really, really, really well, better than anybody else physically can. Like, it's actually possible to become a better passer. Look at Drew Brees' first 4 years of his career. Not that good. He was not this prolific passer. And then something just clicked, right? Like, it's, things can happen and things can accelerate development. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, two things. The Sam Darnold example is good because maybe Justin Fields goes and does some Kyle Shanahan witness protection, you know, goes to a team, is a backup for a while, and his value increases just because he was with a adept coaching staff and didn't play for a while. You know, like, you see that happen all the time. And two, the more we talk about this, the more I just get so excited. I can't remember being more excited for an NFL draft, as excited as I am now, because literally, like, so much can happen, and all the way down to the first pick. Like, we have a guy who we think is going to be the first pick, but we're not sure if he's even going to be taken one overall. And if that doesn't happen, oh my God, like, there's going to be a set of dominoes that it's going to be insane. It's going to be crazy. I can't remember being this, having a draft that this hyped up.
It's going to be wild, dude. You know, and this is another thing I want to tell you. How old do you think Sam Darnold is? He's been in the league. This will be his 7th year in the league.
Okay, so I'm going to guess he's coming up 29 years old.
Sam Darnold's 26 years old today.
Oh my gosh.
He will be 27 in June.
That's, like, crazy.
He came into the league, I believe he was 20 years old. Like, and Jerry was out. Like, that's just, and you got to think, like, Aaron Rodgers, let's see how old Aaron Rodgers was. Aaron Rodgers was about 22, 23 years old when he was drafted. And then he sat for what, 4 years?
Yeah.
Was it 3 or 4 years? Four?
Either way.
Aaron Rodgers was the same age, if not older, than Sam Darnold when Aaron got his first chance to start. He had 4 years to learn. Sam Darnold is now the same age as Aaron Rodgers, about to start on a good team for the first time ever. So it's just like, guys, put some context around what you see. Like, I don't know. I've seen that, and that's how I look at quarterbacks, dude. They get better with age. Nobody comes in the league the best that they can be. Like, you're really not who you're going to be until you're 5 through 10, maybe 5 through 15, if you get that chance. And I don't know, man. You just look at guys like Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco's 39 years old, came in last year off the street, and you could tell his experience was the reason why he balled out. Joe Flacco at 26 years old was not going to do that shit that he did last year in the playoffs or leading up to the playoffs. So quarterbacks are a different beast, man. You can't evaluate them the same as everybody else.
I think that's a really good perspective. All right, let's move on to the running back mania that happened. We had a carousel of guys. I think most notably Saquon Barkley to Philly. Talk to me a little bit about how you look at that move.
Yeah, Saquon to Philly is a positive for them. I think it's a positive for him. It's a positive for his value. We're still waiting to see what the offensive situation play calling is going to look like, because that obviously matters. But I would hope that this is a negative for Jalen Hurts' value. I hope that for Jalen's sake, he's not asked to be who they needed him to be the last few years. Let Saquon take that load off of. That's why he's there. He is there to be the guy on the tough yardage to get those yards so that you're not beating yourself up as a quarterback and then having to go and throw on a 3rd and 7 a couple plays later and be accurate. It's hard to do over time. You can see Jalen's accuracy drop off throughout the year. Dude was beat up, man. He took a beating last year. So I think Saquon, this is a plus, good scheme fit. They needed a guy that could be that type of running back behind that O-line they have that's more downhill, where nothing against Swift, he's just more of like a slash and dash kind of guy, where I think that this team needed a Saquon type of back.
Yeah. Another notable move, Derrick Henry to the Ravens. Obviously a little bit older, but I mean, it's going to be a scary rushing duo.
Yeah. Derrick Henry is everything the Ravens needed. They needed a guy that once he broke the second level could be a home run hit. And you have a guy like Keaton Mitchell who's coming off of a bad knee injury. Like, who knows when he's going to be ready to play. Gus Edwards was going to get you your 2 to 3 yards, but he made you have to be so efficient in the run game. He was never going to take it past the second level and, like, break one for 70. Derrick Henry has it in him to break one for 70 and change the game. He did it for the Titans for years. He still has it in him. He's also not going to be asked to be who he was with Tennessee. I think he's going to be more fresh as the season goes along. He's going to be on a better team. Lamar's going to take some burden off of Derek. Like, I think that is like a, all right, come catch your breath, Derek. We're going to need you when we need you. I think his value is going to be solid still as a good RB1, RB2 in fantasy. And I think he's going to complement Lamar really well.
Yeah, that's kind of been the Ravens' MO over the past 5 years anyway, is this running back by committee. And now one of your committee backs just happens to be, you know, one of the top five greatest running backs of all time. And so as he gets older, he can save his legs and work in that system. But I mean, he's still Derrick Henry at the end of the day.
He's still Derrick Henry. He still has that nasty stiff arm that can just toss you out the club.
Right. So we also had Tony Pollard go to the Titans, DeAndre Swift to the Bears, Austin Eckler to the Commanders. Any of these stick out to you? And I guess more generally, I'm wondering why this year out of any year, does it seem like every running back just swap teams? Like, it seems like there's no guy that stuck around, at least like a bell cow number one kind of guy.
Yeah, I think it's all scheme fit related. I think the first one that jumps out to me is Austin Eckler to the Commanders. And keep in mind, the Commanders still have Brian Robinson, who played pretty well last year. That tells me that they're going to be asking Eckler to be a third down back, which for Eckler, he is not a first and second down back. He can do it, but where he thrives is in the pass game. Where he stays healthy is in the pass game. Where he can keep his feet fresh is in the pass game. So go let him be that for you in that division. And I think that's a really good fit. And then we also had Tony Pollard. I don't love this. I don't love Tony Pollard to the Titans. I don't think that Tony Pollard is like him, as the kids say. I think he's an above average back, and I just think he's like okay. Where I like Spears a lot with Tennessee. So I could see Spears still being the guy by the time the season's all said and done. I wasn't super impressed with Pollard at the end of the year last year with the Cowboys. I thought that their backups actually played better than him. I think Swift to the Bears is a positive, and I think Swift can benefit heavily if Justin Fields is the guy. I don't think that Swift is going to be as much of an asset if Caleb Williams is the guy. I think the zone read game comes alive with Swift. I think the slash and dash that he plays comes alive. I think DNs have to play differently when Fields is in the game versus another quarterback that doesn't run as vertical. So I think that, look, dude, my gut's just telling me the Swift signing, specifically his style of play, was because they're going to keep Fields. I think they would have got a different type of back if they were going to get a more of a passing quarterback.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Can you explain that a little bit more? So like, you know, what would Swift do well that would complement Justin Fields?
Yeah. So in the zone read game and like inside zone game, which is run heavily with like quarterback runs, it's like you stress and you one cut, even mid zone, like when you're running not so downhill, like the whole line is flowing and then you're cutting vertical and you're shaving off the backside of the offensive lineman. That's what Swift is really good at. Quarterbacks that are running quarterbacks, run threat quarterbacks, I feel like they match up well with that kind of run scheme, and you're able to exploit it in zone reads, in like where you have a zone read and you have a sifter coming back from a tight end to cut it off. So kind of like the way that they're going to be, for the type of back that Swift is, that tells me the type of run game that they want to run. They're not going to be a power run team. They're not going to have like a Saquon type of back. And so the way that I'm looking at this is Swift also is not like massive in the pass pro game. So they're going to get him out and they're going to use him a certain way. If you wanted to get more of a three down back, that would tell me that you're probably going to go more towards Caleb Williams, because you're going to want a guy that's going to be protecting in the backfield a little bit more. I just like scheme fit wise, I'm like seeing these puzzle pieces come together in my mind of like, damn, Fields and Swift, that's a backfield that's like red alert for the DNs, red alert for the linebackers. There's a lot of stuff that has to go in there prep wise, where if you get a running back, like if they would have got a Saquon or somebody like that, that tells me a different direction that you're going, because you can keep Saquon on the field more often on first, second, and third down. So I don't know, man. I'm interested to see how it plays out. I watched a lot of DeAndre Swift last year because I watched a lot of Eagle football. And I think he's got a lot of capability. And if they use him with what he's good at, I think it's a huge positive.
I love you connecting those dots there. I hope you're right. I think.
I hope I am too. Yeah. That clip would go crazy.
That clip would go crazy. I think we're going to put it out regardless. And if we're right, we're going to put it out again. And if we're not right, nobody's going to see it anyway. Okay.
Think about it this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
One more time. Think about it this way. If you're reading a running back like Derrick Henry, what type of offensive scheme are you thinking you're probably going to run? If you get a guy like DeAndre Swift, what type of offensive scheme do you think you're going to run? And I'm just saying, I think having a guy like DeAndre Swift in the backfield for a guy like Justin Fields is a good matchup where quarterback-wise, if you were to put DeAndre Swift in the same backfield as Kirk Cousins, DeAndre Swift loses that extra little ability to have a DN frozen from the quarterback zone read fake that allows him to get through and dash with his speed. So DeAndre Swift pairing with a really mobile quarterback brings DeAndre Swift's values up more so than if he was to go with a non-mobile quarterback. So that's kind of what I'm saying.
I got you. Now the part that everybody's here for, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Let's start with Josh Jacobs, man, to the Packers. We're going to get to all of it. But I want to start with Josh Jacobs to the Packers because chronologically that was the first move. So for about 45 minutes, the Packers had the best running back duo in the NFL. And it was started where out of the blue, it felt like out of the blue for me. Maybe you saw this coming, but the Packers signed Josh Jacobs to a pretty friendly, it's a 3-year deal, but when you look at the contract details, it's basically 1 year, $12 million, and there's 2 or 3 more years of team options that they can get rid of them for a pretty small cap hit. And it was really exciting because it seems like the Packers don't make this kind of offensive player personnel splash. How do you think Josh Jacobs fits into this young Packers core?
I think he's going to fit well. And look, I love Aaron Jones. I still would have kept Aaron Jones if I was them, but I that is to say, Josh Jacobs is a good running back. He's really good at making people break tackles and making them miss. He is a home run threat when he gets to the second level, and he's young. He's 26 years old. Aaron Jones is going to be 30. He might be 30 now. I'm not sure. This was strictly an age play, and the Packers hate it as much as you want, better than anyone else in the league, get rid of players before they need to get rid of them more often than not, and that is to protect themselves for longevity. And look, I see it from both perspectives. I don't know if I would have done it. I love Aaron Jones. I think next year he still might have a better year than Josh Jacobs. I think Josh Jacobs was the safer play. And they're looking to the future. So yes, they do have the option to have him for the next 3 years, I believe, for the contract. Like you said, $12 million this year. They owed Aaron Jones $12 million this year, I believe. So
yeah,
they weren't willing to pay Aaron Jones $12 million for his age for 1 year and have no legs to it after the fact, where they were willing to commit to Josh Jacobs for the next few years for $12 million a year. And again, $12 million for the running back, it's not that much money, all things considered, when his age is an asset and the cap space goes up every single year. So $12 million next year isn't as bad as $12 million this year is. So right. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to run really well behind that O-line. That O-line is stout. He's going to have space to run. He's going to make people miss. And I'm excited to see how he translates to the pass game a little bit more. I know he's had some success, but the Packers use the running backs to the pass game a lot. So we'll see how it goes.
It's true. Moving over to the Aaron Jones part, I want to talk about the objective first, because I think that's clear and inarguable. And then there's a lot of subjective here that I want your take on. So the objective, and this is per Matt Schneiderman on Twitter, his Aaron Jones original Green Bay deal was, you're right, $11 million base salary, $1 million in incentive. So this next year would have been about $12 million bucks. It was reported
Same as Josh Jacobs.
It was reported that Aaron Jones' final offer from the Packers was a little less than $4 million in base salary and $2 million in incentives. So a total of $6 million, which is a 50% pay cut. And keep in mind, the year before, he also took a pay cut. So this would have been back-to-back years on pay cuts. 50% is a lot of money. He ends up signing with the Vikings on a $6 million base, $1 million in incentives. So a $7 million total deal, which isn't that much lower than what the Packers' final offer was, but now you get into this subjective territory.
Wait one second. It's higher. It's higher than the Packers' final offer was by $1 million, right? Because the Packers' final offer was $6 million,
and the Vikings' final deal was $6 million base, $1 million incentive, so $7 million bucks basically. So, that's the objective part of it. But the subjective part here is, this is a guy that isn't he doesn't seem like a cog in a machine the same way other players might. You understand? Everybody understands this is a business, but this is Aaron Jones, kind of the face of your franchise. Certainly through this transition, when we had a little, the couple weeks where we weren't sure about Jordan Love, this was the guy. So while it seems like the Packers got his market valuation approximately correct, he's a $7 million running back at the age of 30. That's what they offered him, basically a little less than that. That's what he got with the Vikings. It seems like there's a lot more at play than just the actual numbers here.
This is from a player's perspective what I'm going to give for this. So that offer that the Packers gave him was a shit offer. You can spin it however you want that it was $6 million. It was a $4 million deal. And if he died on the side of the road, if he broke his knee, slipped anything, he was making $4 million when he was owed $11 million. So as far as I'm concerned, outside of incentives, it was a 30%, 33%, 35% of his actual contract value that he was supposed to get this year after taking a pay cut already that he already took last year. So he was offered $4 million from the Packers, and they say, hey, if you don't get injured this year like you did last year, we'll give you that extra $2 million if you produce. So $4 million base. Now you go and look at the Vikings, a rival, willing to offer him 50% more as a base. So $4 million to $6 million is a 50% pay increase going to the Vikings, and then $1 million incentive. And so as a player, you have to always look at worst case scenario. What happens if I get hurt in training camp on some fluke something? Mm-hmm. I am screwed if I stay with the Packers, and then I'm like really screwed because then I'm super cut after next year. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where he goes, and if something bad were to happen, he would get 50% more with the Vikings. So that is that. The $7 million is like the extra $1 million for bonus. Like, he's going to hit that if he stays healthy. He will. And that's still more than them. I think the biggest thing that's frustrating for Packers fans is the Packers probably could have offered him the same exact deal as the Vikings, and he would have stayed.
Yep.
The Packers were not willing to come up from that, but then went out to a third party who they have no affiliation with and offered him more than the salary that Aaron Jones was supposed to get this year that you were complaining about on a one-year deal. And that's my problem with it. If you're going to go give Josh Jacobs $12 million for the year, and you're not going to be willing to give Aaron Jones $11 million for the year, or even $8 million or $7 million, which would have matched the Vikings, like, what are you saying? What are you saying about the number one person in your locker room? And what does that say about future free agents or guys on the team currently that think that they have this loyalty from the Packers that's like, look, if they're willing to cut Aaron Jones, holy shit, I'm like, if I'm a player, I'm like, okay, like, it's, I know how it is now. I know there's no loyalty at all, because if you're going to be loyal to anyone, you're going to be loyal to Aaron Jones, a guy who literally ran you to the playoffs. You had back against the wall, could not lose a playoff game at all. And he ran his ass off to get you to the playoffs and almost got you a trip to the NFC Championship game, which probably would have then led you to the Super Bowl if you didn't blunder the end of that game. So that's what we're dealing with. The most recent version of Aaron Jones, as far as I'm concerned, was a $12 million a year back when it mattered most. They didn't look at it that way, and I get that, but like, Josh Jacobs didn't light the world on fire last year.
No.
At all. I just think, like, good luck to all of them. I think Aaron Jones is going to thrive with the Vikings. I think the Vikings got a hell of a value deal. Look at it on paper. If you look at the season they had last year, how the season ended, if you were to tell me that, oh, the Vikings got Aaron Jones for $7 million for 1 year and the Packers got Josh Jacobs for $12 million for 1 year, who won? Unfortunately, I think that the Vikings won. And I just think that, again, there is no loyalty in this business. And this is far, if you take loyalty out of this, Aaron Jones put on for you in that last month and a half of the season. You can't ask a running back to play better than Aaron Jones did that last 6 week stretch or whatever it was. You can't. Go look at the stats right now. Go look at the film right now. Okay, this is Aaron Jones since week 15. Now we'll go since week 16. Week 15, he didn't get his carries. 21 carries, 127 yards, 6 yards per carry. 20 carries, 120 yards, 6 yards per carry. 22 carries, 111 yards, 5 yards per carry. Two of those were divisional opponents. One of them was against a stout defense in Carolina. Carolina had a really good defense this past year. Then in the playoffs, what do you know? Aaron Jones, 21 attempts, 120 yards, 5.6 yards a carry, 3 touchdowns versus Dallas. Then against San Francisco, one of the better defenses in the league, 18 rushes, 108 yards, 6 yards a carry. Aaron Jones averaged 6 yards a carry in the last 5 weeks of the season. They could not afford to lose a game or they wouldn't have made the playoffs. So as far as recency and all of that, you can't tell me that if he continues to play how he did at the end of last season, that he's not worth way more than $6 million a year, $4 million base, Green Bay Packers. Like that's a slap. If I was him, that's a slap in my face.
Totally. And I don't even think this is a conversation. If he doesn't go and sign for $7 million with the Vikings, yep. like it was reported yep. that he wanted to retire a Packer. And it's clear that yep. he was willing to take less money. And the Packers and the Vikings weren't even that far off from what their final deal was, except for in that base. Well, all the Packers had to do was yep. come up a little bit. And that's the bittersweet part yeah. here. I saw that the Packers, the amount of money they saved by cutting Aaron Jones was the equivalent they saved yeah. by like cutting Royce Newman's salary, like some backup lineman. And they couldn't come up a little bit to keep Jones. And I mean, you saw, I don't know how excited you were during that yeah. 45 minutes that we thought we had Aaron Jones and Josh Jacobs, but like that would have been incredible. And I could argue yeah. that would have been worth the extra $2 million in base salary. You would have had to pay the guy to stick around, but this is a cruel business. And the Packers are that kind of team, which is going to move off you a year early every time.
And that's just, again, if you want to talk about smart financial decisions, you could have kept Aaron Jones for $7 million, but you went out and I don't know. I bet Josh Jacobs will be fine. He's a yeah. good player. But it's not about Josh Jacobs. This is about, again, the same repetitive thing time and time again with the Green Bay Packers and the exit of players. It's just like, come on, man. What are we doing? What are we actually doing?
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Okay. So I don't want you to get mad at me, but I'm just going to like,
okay.
I'm just going to think, because Rodgers has obviously made this comment too, that Packers do not treat veterans well on the way out. The Packers have had a lot of success, especially in their transition from older players to younger players. This last year was the perfect example of that, where they basically flip over their roster, skill position, quarterback, defense included, and they have one of the youngest cores in the league. Now, even with Josh Jacobs, they have an offense or a full team that is, average age is younger than 25 years old, which is insane. I'm 25 years old, born in 1999, and all these guys are younger than me on average.
Yep.
And so they've done it well. Like, I think we'd all agree that today the Packers are in a good spot because of the transitions they made. So would you rather, and come at it from a player's perspective, but like as a fan, I'm thinking, would I rather have loyalty to these guys, the organization have loyalty to these guys to make them feel good at the end of their career, or a team that is consistently competitive because they can turn over a roster? And maybe that involves slighting some guys. I don't know. I understand that there's like a business element, a human element to this, but you know, at the same time, maybe there's a middle ground where you can do both, but it seems like if that's the case, they would just do both.
Yeah. I mean, I think they could have, this is the one that got me. I understand the business part of a lot of these other signings, a lot of these other cuts. I get that. This was the one that I was like, this is messed up. Like this one, I think went a little bit too far with the power that is to be had with the Green Bay Packers. And I just think these types of moves deliberately diminish what Green Bay is all about slightly. And you talk about history, you talk about loyalty, you talk about the fans, the people, the players, it's the people in the building. Like, I understand business decisions, but not this one. Like, dude, it'd be different if he did this in weeks 1 through 8 and then tailed off at the end of the season. He's the only reason you won these games the way you did. And to go and say that he's not worth XYZ for whatever reason, because of market value or because of age or because of whatever, I mean, I'm not buying it.
Yeah. And you come back to, you just come back to like, you're right about his production. And also, it seems like there was an extra level here where you were getting a leader, heartbeat of the team type of guy. And I don't even think you can really put a value on that. And so not only are you not treating a longtime Packer well at the end of his career, but you're sort of like ripping the heartbeat out of this locker room, which has to be even more damaging than all the other things that you've already described.
100%, dude. I mean, just, we should look at the Packers' total offensive output when Aaron Jones is on the field versus when Aaron Jones is off the field.
Yeah.
That would tell the story. And there's just some things that, like, I guarantee next year, if anything, like, not going to speak it into existence or whatever, but there will be times where it's like, damn, kind of would be nice to have Aaron Jones right now. I guarantee that'll happen. And just because you know what comes with him being on the field.
Totally. So, I was hoping so bad he was going to go to like the Texans or some team. Cause I even think this conversation would be easier if he went to a team that wasn't the Minnesota Vikings, that part just puts an absolute cherry on the top and really just like a dagger in the heart of the fans. But speaking of the Texans, they made a couple exciting moves. I'm kind of dubbing the Texans as my de facto AFC team. I think there's a lot of similarities between them and the Packers with their young core. And if Aaron Jones would have just gotten to go play with CJ Stroud, who's like becoming my second favorite player, I would say, behind Jordan Love, that would have been awesome. But instead they go and get Joe Mixon. They get Danielle Hunter from the Vikings, who's now going to sit opposite to Will Anderson. I mean, how excited are you if you're the Texans right now?
Dude, the Texans are trying to curb stomp the Jaguars right now. That's what it's all about. They are not giving the Jaguars any room to breathe in this division that the Jaguars thought they were given for the next 10 years under the reign of Trevor Lawrence. That is over. That is a pipe dream. It is over for the Jaguars. This is the Texans division now, and they're clearly going to make the moves year in and year out to stay on top with a quarterback that's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He might be top three right now. There are not many people playing the position better than CJ Stroud, and I'm so excited to see what he can do in year two, because he did this his rookie year in year one, right? Like this, he played at such a high level. He's only going to get better. The guys around him are only going to get better. I mean, this CJ Stroud is what I would call a generational happening at quarterback. Talent wise, whatever, just the way he plays, this type of transition doesn't happen often. So yeah, Texans fans, you should be really happy.
It's not even a transition. It's like a total reclamation project. I mean, they came into last year and I think people had them pegged as like, I don't know, the 4-win team, maybe 7 if Stroud showed flashes, but you want to talk about a guy putting a team on his back. I think one of my favorite parts about Stroud was the culture shift that seemed to happen. I remember one of his early press conferences, him coming in and saying, I want fans to feel proud to wear Texans gear. It seemed like he took that really personally. And then you saw that just carry out because he backed it up on the field every single time he got the opportunity. Yeah. It's just so awesome.
Dude, CJ Stroud, like, shout out to Sketch, by the way. Sketch is always wearing a CJ Stroud jersey, but like he needs to be studied of like, how did he transition? And again, the system wise, this is going to be the system that the Texans have on offense, the system that the 49ers had for Brock Purdy to be able to go in and play the way he did, the elevation from Tua for the most part this past year, from who he was to what he is now in the new system, that Shanahan system, like that core of it, where it is stemmed from with Bobby Slowick, Mike McDaniel, and Shanahan of who he is now, that is going to give teams a new blueprint to get quarterbacks playing younger, to not need such a ramp up time. And then, dude, I mean, I'm excited because I think that we're going to look back 5 to 10 years from now and be like, dang, CJ Stroud, what he was able to do, what the Texans were able to do, is going to be studied by teams just like the Lions are right now. I look at all of this like this is going to be like the new Patriots. People try to build the Patriots dynasty. No, people are going to be trying to do what the Texans are doing right now. People are going to be trying to do what the Lions are doing with their team building. Like it's one of those things that's like going to be a staple in the NFL moving forward.
Dude, and you mentioned the Jaguars. Like you're totally right. It was thought that this was going to be their division forever. I mean, you had the Colts, Texans, and the Titans all come in with rookie quarterbacks, all of which you were pretty unsure about. And then all of a sudden they slip. And then this free agency period is like, what did they do? Calvin Ridley's gone. They signed Gabe Davis and Devin Duvernay as their weapons. I don't even know if Christian Kirk is still there. Like, it seems like shit is hitting the fan quickly. And I can't imagine after another bad year, like if the Jaguars miss the playoffs again, Doug Peterson might be gone. You might be looking at Trevor Lawrence differently. Ugly fast there.
Dude, if Trevor Lawrence plays how he did last year, he will not be their quarterback after next season. You heard that here first. Pocket Presence, the date is 3-something. It's in March.
3-14.
If Trevor Lawrence makes the same mistakes that he did last year with game management, game understanding, it's just like it's football 101 stuff. He had a really big problem handling the situational football part of the game and doing stupid things. Cost his team a few games doing that. If he does that again this year, he will not be there the following year. So I hope he cleans it up because he has crazy talent. He's got a high ceiling, but it's just like, I don't know why. I don't know how those things happen because either they're not talked about, you're just going through it like a robot, or I don't know. But I am on the CJ Stroud train. I am off the Trevor Lawrence train officially, and I think this is the Texans division to lose for the unforeseeable future. This could be a Drew Brees type of reign in the AFC South as it was in the NFC South for a really long time.
I mean, it's from the Jaguars' perspective, it's certainly not going to get any easier because you have Anthony Richardson coming back next year, and he was showing flashes early, and they were still super competitive with Gardner Minshew back there. So if Richardson can show any progression, Shane Steichen has proven to be a more than competent head coach. Like, this has not become a cakewalk.
No, not at all. Like, if I was a betting man.
You, in the AFC, where there's already a million good quarterbacks.
Yeah, dude, like, tell me if you're a Jaguars fan, are you actually excited to see what happens this year? Do you actually have a good feeling? You might be excited. Do you have a good feeling about what's going to happen to you this year, Jaguars fans? Because if I was you, I'd be tight. I would be really nervous. Like, you know what it is.
Yeah. All right.
That might be a clip, dang, too. Tom was right. Yeah, dang.
Yeah, I mean, you got the hand motion up there. Like, I can just picture that as a clip, a screenshot.
It's
yeah,
a tight one.
Yeah,
zoom in with a tight. I should have
to not be excited about the football season. I don't think you're wrong. Like, that's probably how they're feeling. Like that. Like, it's almost like you're just waiting for one thing to go wrong, and then you're like, here it is. Like, you're just waiting for things to hit the fan.
Look, I was a Falcons player. I know what waiting for things to go wrong feels like.
Bro, that's the whole organization.
Yeah, it's new now. It's over.
They're turning around down there. All right. Well, I mean, that's it. So much happened. We didn't talk about Brian Burns. You mentioned Christian Wilkins and Max Crosby out there in Las Vegas. But I mean, there's like the fact that the Brian Burns thing is like at the bottom of our list. That's an all pro level player. And he just kind of gets brushed underneath because we had so much movement.
Yeah, this was a fun free agency. It was definitely overwhelming. There's a lot happening. And I think that like what free agency tells you more about teams than anything is like what does your team think about this season coming up? What are they willing to spend? What do they think their window is? What is the coach's situation? Like, are they going all in? Is the coach and GM tied together? Because if they don't win, they're both out. Like, I think free agency tells you what you think about your team currently, what you think you need, obviously. And then what is your next like 2 to 3 years of runway look like? Are you trying to compete right now? Or are you just going to go and focus all on the draft because you need to build anyways, and you don't want to waste money right now. So I think we got to figure out a little bit about what teams thought about themselves, what teams thought about past players, new players. And I feel like we're in the modern day of the NFL where it feels like the NBA, like every year, everyone's fair game, trades, cuts, like who the hell knows what happens. So I'm excited. I think this was a fun week. I'm glad we were able to cover as much as we did. But now I'm like, okay, let's like speed this up. Let's get to the draft so we know what we're dealing with. This next month or so is going to be a long stretch for the draft.
It totally is. Is there a team, we'll end on this. Last year was, I think we could all say it was the Texans, where I don't even remember a notable free agent move they made last year. But then you have CJ Stroud in the draft and they pop onto the scene, one of the most dominant teams. Yeah. Is there a team after this free agency that you're kind of eyeing up? Maybe they weren't so good last year that you're like, next year, I think not a lot of people are talking about it, but they're poised to break onto the scene.
Yeah, dude. One is coming to mind right now, and it's the Raiders. I don't know why. Like, I don't think they have it, but I think you looked at the Colts last year. The Colts were making a run for the playoffs the entire year, and I think the Raiders have a better team than the Colts did. And Minshew's now the guy. Like, they got good culture. I mean, the Raiders were winning games with less than ideal situations last year, and they got better. Yeah. So, I mean, Patrick Mahomes has to deal with Christian Wilkins and Max Crosby twice a year. Like, the Raiders are a team that I don't think people are going to want to play. You don't know how they're going to figure out a way to win, but I think they're going to find ways to win. And I think they have a culture that's being set. I think they're bringing guys in. They obviously let Josh Jacobs go. They didn't want to, like, if the Raiders are willing to move on from Josh Jacobs and like let that happen, that was kind of my like, all right, what's the deal with the Packers now? Why are they doing this? you know what I mean? Like, just there's something going on there that we're going to look back 4 years from now, 3 years from now, maybe 2 years from now and be like, ah, it all makes sense. Mm. But yeah, I think the Raiders are that team. I'm also, dude, I think the Vikings are not going to be slaps. I think Kevin O'Connell is a really good coach.
Dude, it's and not I think Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is not it like that, though.
He's not it like that, but I don't think he has to be like that. Nick Mullins was throwing for 350 yards a game.
Yeah, Nick how many Mullins. Of those games did they win? They went to freaking who the guy they started against? I don't remember the guy. Jaren Hall. They started Jaren Hall against the Packers because Nick Mullins wasn't it.
I got you there, but Sam Darnold is better than any quarterback they had on the roster.
That's fair.
Aaron Jones is better than any running back they had on the roster. Justin Jefferson's actually going to play football again.
Like, they resign him. They haven't resigned him yet.
So I'm just like, I don't know. I could see them being okay. I still look at the Raiders, though. I think the Raiders are the ones. Don't be nervous, Tyler. The Packers are still better than the Vikings. But
I am nervous. I want them to draft. I want them to draft J.J. McCarthy, the Vikings, because I don't think he's very good. And I just kind of want them to mess it up like that. And I think they will. They're going to have to draft somebody in the first round. And they're not going to, unless they trade up and make a huge splash, which I don't really see them doing. They're going to get like a Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix level guy. And like, I think there is a pretty steep drop off from watching all the great quarterback breakdowns on Pocket Presence YouTube channel.
Let's go, man.
I think there's a steep drop off. So
before we're out of here, though, too, thank you guys for 10,000 subscribers on YouTube. If you guys are new here, definitely go comment, subscribe. Make sure you stick around. We got a lot of really cool stuff on the way. This has been this episode, Free Agency. Holy crap, we're here. The draft is on the horizon. We'll see you guys next time.